welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast. If you love tennis and want to improve your game, this podcast is for you. Whether it's technique, strategy, equipment, or the mental game, tennis professional Ian Westerman is here to make you a better player. And now, here's Ian.
Welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast, your place for free, expert tennis instruction that can truly help you improve your game. Today's episode of the Essential Tennis Podcast is brought to you by SomersetSportsPerformance.com and also TennisTours.com, where you can go to purchase tennis travel packages to go to professional tournaments. Use the promotional code ESSENTIAL to receive a discount off your next purchase of a travel package to a professional tennis event. Well, today on the podcast, I'm going to be joined by a friend of mine, Matt Hill, who is the assistant coach at Mississippi State University. We're going to be talking all about doubles and putting good, effective doubles teams together. Very interesting conversation and lots of mental tennis discussion having to do with doubles, which is very interesting to me, and I'm sure to most of you as well who play doubles. Real quickly, before we get to that conversation, I want to tell you guys about a clinic that I'm putting together that's going to be in Baltimore, Maryland, most likely late summer or early fall. If you're interested in attending an Essential Tennis day-long clinic or camp with myself and other Essential Tennis members and listeners, go to the forums. And there's a new topic I just posted with some information having to do with when it's going to be and the cost, etc. Or you can send me an email at ian@essentialtennis.com, ian@essentialtennis.com. All right, well, let's get down to business and get to today's show. Sit back, relax, and get ready for some great tennis instruction. My guest today on the podcast is Matt Hill. Matt and I went to college together at Ferris State University, and he is currently the assistant men's tennis coach at Mississippi State. Matt, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's going on, Ian?
Not much. Hey, I really appreciate you coming on the program. And Matt, you and I had a great time playing together and hanging out together at college. And just saw you not too long ago at Jason's wedding. That was a lot of fun. And I'm really happy that I can have you on the show to talk about some team-type dynamics as it relates to tennis, because that's kind of exactly what you're doing right now. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about what you've done in the past as far as teaching goes and your tennis and what you're doing now?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see. Like you said, we played together at Ferris. I had coached a little bit before that, a high school team back in Michigan in East Lansing. And then after graduating from Ferris, I actually did my master's degree at University of Alabama, where I was assistant coach there for the men's team at University of Alabama. And then from a team standpoint also, I've done some USDA national teams, juniors, zonals and such. And then after finishing my master's at University of Alabama, the men's assistant job, well, the head and the assistant job basically opened at Mississippi State, and a good friend of ours took the head job, and it just ended up being a good fit. So switched over there, and now just working. We just finished up our second season here at Mississippi State. So
cool.
Been going well.
So tell me, a lot of times people like myself and Jason and Mark and Royce, who have all been on the podcast before, a lot of times those of us who get into the tennis industry become teaching professionals at a commercial facility or a private country club or maybe a resort. What led you to get into coaching and kind of more high performance or college collegiate coaching right now?
To be honest, I mean, it was kind of me looking at the overall longevity from a career standpoint. I enjoyed working with the higher level kids or more motivated individuals, I guess. I've kind of worked in the private sector and done the country club thing. And while I just enjoy being around people. So I enjoyed it. But at the same time, I felt like it's sometimes, especially in the country club setting, more entertainment or social.
Yeah.
And I felt like if I was going to spend my life's work doing something, I wanted it to maybe be a little more impact, I guess, oriented, which as often as we're working with these guys and as much as we're around each other, we have a pretty good influence on them during their 4 years here. So
cool.
I just felt like it was a 18 to 22 was an important time in a young man's life and thought I could maybe help influence them in a way. So
cool. Yeah. Good answer. Well, before we get to our questions today from a listener, last question for you. Give our listeners an idea of exactly what type of level of players that you're dealing with at Mississippi State.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, our goals are obviously to bring Mississippi State back to the top 10 in the nation where they had been in the past. They had been top 10 in the nation for 10 years in a row in the 90s. And that's kind of what they expect here, being in the Southeastern Conference with Florida and Georgia and all those schools. So competing with them, I mean, naturally we're looking at kids that are top 25 in the nation in the United States, top 50 to 100 in the world in the junior rankings, kind of going off rankings. But there's always those kids that are 250, 300 in the world, or even maybe 50 or 70 in the United States that aren't as exposed and are just as good. So, but definitely, I mean, we're looking at players that are hoping and wanting to continue their tennis after they finish collegiately and going on to the pro circuit. I mean, I would say out of our eight guys, six of them are very serious about playing pro tennis, and during the summer are playing futures and challengers. So
cool.
The level is pretty high.
Nice. It must be exciting working with that level of player. And it's nice that you still go and do camps and USTA teams and things like that on the side as well. That's exactly why I wanted you on the show, to talk about a couple of questions here having to do with putting together teams. And a lot of times tennis is viewed as an individual sport, but as most of my listeners know, it's very widely competed in a team environment as well, both in USTA and obviously, you know, your high school, your college teams, and club teams as well. A lot of times there's inter-club competition and that sort of thing. So what we're going to talk about is how to put together an effective doubles team. And all of you who play on a team right now, this is going to be good information for you to be able to identify possibly the type of player that you're going to work best with as a doubles player. And we're also going to talk about, for those of you who are helping manage or captain a team, or those of you who are team captains in a USTA league, we're going to also talk about how to put together a good team lineup. I think the doubles pairings is probably going to be of most interest to most people, so we're going to cover that first. And Matt, when you're putting together your doubles lineup for Mississippi State, tell us in general, what types of things are you looking for when you're putting guys together so that they can hopefully perform at their best possible level?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, there's numerous factors that we look at. Probably the two strongest ones that we're looking at is chemistry between the two individuals, and then also strengths and weaknesses from a tennis standpoint.
Okay, let's go with the chemistry first. I think that's interesting, and I think that my listeners are going to find it interesting because it's probably something that I would guess most average level players probably don't think about a whole lot. I would bet that most 3.5 or 4.0 level players are probably looking at, you know, I like the deuce side, so I need somebody who likes the ad side, you know, that sort of thing. Exactly how important for your players at Mississippi State is, their personality or their emotions, you know, how they carry themselves on the court, and how much do you think that would carry over to kind of an average level tennis player?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's huge. I would put it at a higher of importance than the tennis side, to be honest with you.
Wow.
Because, I mean, a successful doubles team is, one, they're going to be pretty high energy, and two, they're going to be able to, they have to be able to communicate with each other. So if you have a team, and I know this happens a lot because I do coach some USTA teams where the captains switch partners a lot and they just kind of put people with people.
Right.
That, one thing we do here, we're very firm believers, and we don't change partners a whole lot because you have to learn each other's tendencies. You have to learn how to speak to one another. I mean, it's a lot like a, it's a lot like a relationship to a point where, and
starts,
going into
it starts
personality
with good communication, right, Matt?
Yeah. I mean, you have to have that or it's not going to go well.
Right.
So, but yeah, I mean, on the court from a personality standpoint, I mean, generally you're going to have someone that's a little stronger personality with someone that's, you know, a little weaker personality. You're going to definitely want a person that's a decisive leader on the court, that's calling plays or kind of running, kind of captaining the Devils team for the most part. So that's definitely a deciding factor in kind of who we put together. We don't put together two guys that are pretty quiet and, you know, can kind of get down on themselves because, as you know, I mean, someone's going to have to pick someone up, you know.
Right.
You've got to have that guy out there. You can't put two guys together that are just going to kind of fall apart together.
So just to be clear, you think that even at kind of an average recreational level of play, that's it's even probably more important than technical type things?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because and it goes into enjoyability on the court too. I mean,
sure.
If you enjoy who you're playing with, you're going to play better. You know, if you despise playing with a certain guy or lady, I mean, you're not going to play well.
Right.
I mean, you see it all the time. So I would definitely, because it affects the level of play. So therefore I would have to put it above it.
And that I find that very interesting because it's something that in college, first of all, I didn't really play doubles until college. And as we both know, obviously in college tennis, you don't really have a whole lot of choice. You're going to be a singles and a doubles player, most of the time. And I didn't really start thinking about on court, you know, emotions and personality until, I don't want to say it was too late, but I found out that for myself, I'm somebody who needs to be picked up as far as being a part of a doubles team. If I'm kind of left alone and I'm left to be by myself and my partner's kind of quiet and laid back, that's a situation where I personally can kind of self-destruct very easily. And I need somebody with high energy who can kind of keep me pumped up and keep me focused. And when I was able to play with Jason in a regional tournament in college, that's by far the best doubles I ever played. He's a very intense personality on the court and really kept me sharp. So basically the moral of the story is we don't want like personalities together. Is that right?
I mean, generally speaking, no. Generally. I mean, but there are certain circumstances where people are more comfortable with someone that has the same personality and they mesh well.
Okay.
But from a general rule of thumb, yeah, we're generally going to put together teams of people with different personalities because, like you said, I mean, it's part of a self-confidence thing too. I mean, you know, you've got to have one of the players out there to be able to help the other one or calm the other one down.
I mean, right.
Sometimes you can get over the top with your arousal level and you need someone to bring you down. So, I mean, it's definitely a big factor. And I the chemistry thing, it can easily get, how I want to say this, it can easily be misconstrued with results. And what I mean by that is you could put a pair together and they lose a couple matches and you're like, oh, they don't mesh well together.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not always true. And that's why we don't switch partners a lot, because there is a there's a certain time frame that you have to allow for the players to learn about each other and learn how to speak together, like how to speak to each other and how to push each other's buttons. And that takes a little bit of time. So don't jump ship too early if you know. It's easy to be like, oh, they've lost the matches. They don't mesh well together, which that's not always true. So that's an important point right there.
What, I mean, how do you tell? How much time do you give a team before you finally call it quits and say, all right, this is just not working out?
Well, it depends on, every situation is different. I think it depends on the openness of the players.
Okay.
Like if they're open to working with each other and they're, you know, maybe they're friends, yeah, you can stick with it a little longer. If the players aren't open to it, you're not going to make them open to it. Because once things go bad in a match, which every match has situations that things are going to go bad, you're either going to shut down. So, I mean, we have that with certain guys on our team. It's not that they don't like each other. they just don't believe in themselves as a pairing, and there's nothing that we're going to be able to do to change that, so we don't put them together. Whether they're good or bad doubles players, it doesn't matter.
Okay. That's really interesting to me. Which type of player would you say that you are, by the way? Are you somebody who is laid back and like somebody
no.
intends to pick you up, or the other way around?
I'm definitely the other way around.
So do you prefer playing with somebody who's more laid back, who can kind of keep you under control then?
Yeah, I think, when I played with Mark, you know, I felt real comfortable with him because he was definitely more laid back and quiet. And then I feel like that helped me where, I mean, Fuko and I did well together. Really well towards the end once we started, but it took us a whole semester to figure out how to deal with each other, to talk to each other, so we weren't, because we were both so we were both really energetic
right,
that it
yeah.
was at first it just clashed and we didn't do well together.
And
but we were open to working with each other and we talked through it and worked through it and it ended up working out.
Nice. That's a very interesting topic to me, and very often on the podcast, your mental tennis topics they're very prevalent in general. So I like talking about stuff like this. Anything else to add before we move on to kind of more technical things about doubles partners as it relates to personality, et cetera?
No, not that I can think of.
Okay. All right, let's go ahead and move on then. But again, I enjoy that topic. I'm sure we could come back to that again at some point. Let's talk about, this is an interesting topic to me as well, being a lefty. What's your take on putting righties and lefties together, or two lefties together? Do you think that when a righty and lefty play together, forehands should be in the middle or on the outside? Or what's your take on that?
I don't have a personal preference with the lefty being in the middle or, you know, vice versa on that. You know, you need to have a weapon in the middle. That's important.
Okay.
So I guess it just depends on what the player likes. I mean, some lefties love their backhand. So I guess having a weapon in the center of the court is definitely more of a important factor for me than whether they're on the deuce or ad side. I generally probably wouldn't put two lefties together personally, because one of the strongest advantages lefties have is that people don't see the serve very often and it's tough to read.
Right.
Now, you put two lefties together, okay, well, they're going to get used to the serve a lot quicker, and just they pick up on it easier, and I think it almost takes away a little bit from the strength that a lefty brings to the table. So,
okay.
Again, we're only working with, you know, eight guys or something, so I'm gonna use my lefties probably at different spots. You know, I'm gonna break them up more. I probably wouldn't put them together.
Okay,
that's just personal. But.
All right, sounds good. So regardless of righty or lefty or whatever, you definitely want some kind of weapon in the middle, and don't put lefties together. Is there general guidelines there?
Yeah, weapon in the middle, and then. Yeah, I'm not saying I would never put two lefties together by any means, but I think I would like to see more than one at different spots.
Sure.
Which would, I think, would help. So.
All right, what about, and this is something that I see a lot in my club teaching. I don't know how much of this you would see as a coach at Mississippi State, but I know that you're involved with some USTA teams as well. But tell me if I'm wrong. Maybe I'm off on this, but I would assume that everybody that you guys are recruiting is extremely comfortable moving forwards aggressively and has a good solid net game. But what about as this relates to a more average level tennis player? A lot of times you'll see players at a recreational level who are more comfortable at the net or more comfortable at the baseline. How would you put or mix together those kind of dynamics? Do you want to pair together a person who's good at the net and a person who's comfortable back so that they can, you know, cover up and back? Or do you want two kind of like styled players together who can cover, you know, both at the net or both back? Or what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. And to be honest, I mean, the kids we get, even at the levels that we bring in, you would be surprised how comfortable or non-comfortable they are coming forward, especially when you're recruiting players from Spain or predominantly countries that play on clay a lot. They don't spend that much time at the net. So We have multiple players that we're constantly working on them trying to come forward and
really?
Comfortability at the net from, yeah, we have a kid from Spain who's not comfortable up there, a Belgium kid. I mean, we have a couple of guys that just, they don't, you know, and they don't grow up playing a whole lot of doubles either in those countries. So we struggle with that a lot.
How do you match them up? Do you put them with somebody who's really comfortable at the net, or do you put them with another baseliner and have them play two back or something like that? Or what do you?
You have a couple variables that come in there. One is the serve, is how good their serves are.
Okay.
If their serve is not very good, you're probably not going to be putting them with another baseliner because they're going to struggle holding serve, and in doubles, if you're not holding serve consistently, you're going to struggle. So if I have a player that is not comfortable at the net, I got to put a server with them so that when that guy's serving, that they can still hold. You know, if he has a big serve and the other guy doesn't have comfortable volleys, he needs to be able to work with something pretty easy off the return.
Sure.
Whereas if the guy does not have a good serve, I need someone at the net that's pretty competent to be able to clean up a little bit off maybe serves that aren't as strong as the level that they're playing at. So from that standpoint, that would be something we would look at. Now, from a stylistic standpoint, I mean, we do have a team that is, they're both baseliners basically, and neither of them are super comfortable at the net. They're capable, but not comfortable. And, that just changes really the style they play.
Sure.
You know, they play double back all the time, first and second serves. They serve and stay back a good bit. One of them does. Really, if you're going to get into where the guy is serving and staying back, that's really when the guy at the net, I mean, he has to be somewhat competent because your opponents are, I mean, it's not a difficult tactic to figure out. I mean, if you've got a one-up, one-back situation, the other team's going to crash for sure, and then they're all over your guy at the net.
Right.
It's not going to last but 2-3 shots, and you're done. So,
would you say that applies to more like a club-level player as well, what you're talking about?
Probably not as much because their comfortability at the net isn't the same. You know, I think that you see a lot more one-up, one-back situations.
Right.
And a lot less maybe serving and volleying. So it might not apply as much, but as definitely as the level goes up, it's going to be definitely be more of a factor.
Okay. Good stuff. Let's go with one more technical topic here and kind of wrap up the doubles discussion. And this is something that you brought up while we were talking before we started recording, and that has to do with playing abilities. And this is kind of another kind of mental tennis type topic, or maybe a emotional or personality type topic. And you were saying that depending on differences in playing abilities, some tennis players really like playing with somebody who's stronger than them, and they're able to play up and kind of rise to the occasion. And other players really dislike playing with somebody weaker than them, kind of feeling like they have to pick up the slack and stuff like that. Go ahead and expand on that a little bit and tell our listeners what you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a situation where we ran into a little bit this year. And what we experienced was you have some players that enjoy playing with someone that's better than them, and they'll actually perform better because they want to, you know, they want to satisfy the other person, and they enjoy kind of that environment. Whereas you have other players that they do a lot better if they're the better player on the court and they are carrying someone, they'll perform better. So it takes a little bit kind of to figure out, and you have to really talk with your players, or I guess with your partner, or just figure out for yourself if you're the type of player that likes to play with someone that's better than you, and you know you perform better that way, or you like to be the one that's carrying the other person. And you know, for us, the player that we experienced that likes to play with someone else that's better wasn't, you know, super mentally tough, and from a standpoint that they couldn't handle their opponent making, or their partner making errors.
Okay.
Like they would break down when their partner broke down. And then if you see that situation all the time where, I wasn't going to say it. Well, you know, Jason and Kyle would be a good example. Can I say that?
Yeah, go ahead. There's very few people listening that know who we're talking about, but everybody knows Jason. He's been on the show several times. But yeah, go ahead.
Well, when Kyle would miss, Jason probably didn't respond too well to it, and then Kyle kind of fed off that. You could see him.
Right.
He would kind of break down confidence-wise.
Sure.
And we had the same situation. And so you that, it definitely plays a factor. I mean, it's dealing with basically self-confidence and kind of, you know, how you thrive in what situation, really. Where we had another player who, he likes being the one that he's carrying a player. You know, he's more of a stronger personality. He wants to, you know, kind of talk and call the shots. And he performed better when he was with someone that he felt like he was better than. So it varies from person to person. I don't think there's real one way or the other, but it definitely was a factor that we had to think about when we were changing partners and doing things because of injury.
So. That's really interesting. And by the way, I forgot to mention when we started that these questions all come, or rather these topics, all come from Tom in New York City. And in wrapping up our kind of doubles partner discussion here, Matt, give Tom some, because I know that he captains a USTA team. Do you have any tips to tell Tom about kind of how to look for these things? We've gone over a bunch of different topics. Ranging from, you know, technical strengths and weaknesses, net player or a baseline player, emotional, personality differences. And is there a trick that you use or you and your and the head coach use to scout out players emotionally and technically? I mean, how do you guys try to identify these characteristics? What would you tell Tom to look for when it comes to these things? I know that's a big question.
No. There's two parts to it. Are you talking about one, recruiting players, or the players we already are dealing with?
No, players that you're already dealing with and most effectively pairing them.
Yeah. Okay. So, one, I mean, obviously the biggest thing is when they're playing in pressure situations in match play, you know, when you're playing other teams, I mean, that's when you're really going to pay attention to what's going on.
Okay.
And you're going to look at, how they respond to one another. Do they break communication when things go down, when things go bad? Where are they struggling? Like going back into the, you know, obviously the two things we talked about was the chemistry and then the tennis. You know, the tennis, you can figure that out before the match starts. And you can figure that out on the practice courts. I mean, if one guy can't serve and one guy can't volley, I mean, I wouldn't put them together.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing you can kind of figure out beforehand.
Okay.
But the chemistry stuff, that's tricky. I mean, you're not going to figure that out until they're in high-pressure situations and they have to come up with goods and you have to see how they deal with each other. Because, to be honest, I mean, some people are great friends off the court. I mean, they look like they would mesh really well together. And then the next thing you know, they won't even talk to each other when things go down or whatever.
Right.
So being very observant to what's happening when the matches are going on, and then after that, how open are they to talking and fixing things with each other? And if they're not, I mean, you might want to switch up teams.
Okay.
If they are very open in developing their relationship as a doubles partner, then I would, you know, I would continue to work with them.
I like how you said, as your first piece of advice, that watch and see what your individual players do in high pressure situations, you know, where it really matters. I guess that's really where we kind of show our true colors, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, that's when you're going to really see what's going on, you know? And I mean, if you can figure out ways to incorporate that in your training, that's all the better, because then you're not having to have to learn from natural situations. You can figure it out beforehand. So I mean, from a USTA standpoint, I don't know if you could, you know, you have matches, they play matches in order to, you know, compete that week or something like that, if you could put pressure in that way. I mean, but that's definitely the most important factor, because that's when it matters. I mean, you, you have to know what they're capable of when it matters, not when there's no pressure.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, Matt, we're going to wrap up the doubles topic, and as it always goes on this show, we've spent a lot of time on that first topic, and I'm actually going to go ahead and save our second topic, which was going to be how to put together a team lineup, an overall team lineup. I think this doubles topic was really what people are going to be most interested in hearing anyway, but I'm going to save that second topic and hopefully have you back on the show again sometime soon. But let's wrap up the doubles topic in general quickly. Any other final thoughts as it comes to pairing players together, mental aspects, technical aspects? Anything else to add before we wrap up the show?
I mean, the one thing we probably didn't touch on would be when you're talking about from a tennis standpoint, like hitters and setters. Like, someone who is very aggressive from a game style standpoint, and someone who's more conservative and consistent. That's definitely a factor we look at when we're putting them together, because, you know, as you want consistent results, and you're not going to get that if maybe you put two hitters together, probably more so than two setters. So that would probably be the only other area that maybe we didn't brush on that would probably be pretty important.
Yeah, I haven't heard those phrases in quite a while. I remember talking about that with my doubles partner back in college, Mark. I remember the two of us discussing that, and I can't remember the last time I heard it actually since then. Can you please quickly describe the kind of the general description or definition of a hitter and a setter?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a hitter is going to be a person that's more aggressive and plays bigger, is going to really be your goes for shots, is real aggressive in doubles, maybe crashes the net hard. You know, generally that goes with the stronger personality person. And then your setter is going to be your guy that's really consistent, really solid. And generally from a return standpoint is what you're thinking is you want a guy that's, you know, your setter isn't going to miss a return basically.
Okay.
Ever. You know, that's the goal of the setter. And then the hitter is, okay, well, he can be more aggressive because he has his counterpart that makes every return basically. That's generally kind of the rule, the premise behind that notion.
So in general, you want to put a hitter with a setter.
With a setter. Now, I mean, two setters, two guys that are just solid. I mean, yeah, that's and maybe a little conservative, but, you know, two hitters can cause, I mean, you can get some big wins, but you're probably going to have some bad losses as well just because of inconsistency in the game. You know, that's kind of how it works.
Sure. So,
but, yeah, that would probably be the only other area that I can touch on.
Okay.
But it's a pretty simple concept.
Yeah. All right, well, Matt, with that, we're going to wrap things up. We're all out of time. But listen, I really appreciate you spending the time to come on the show and talk with us about doubles. And I'm going to save this team topic for a later show, and hopefully I can have you back sometime in the future. But thank you very much for your time. We all really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Love doing it.
All right, that brings the Essential Tennis Podcast, episode number 70, to a close. Thank you very much for joining me today, and I hope that you found today's show helpful. Before we wrap things up, I just wanted to remind all of you about my newest audio show, and that is Essential Tennis Live. You can find the page for the live show at essentialtennis.com/live. And you can download the shows there. We just did a new show last night in which we talked about whether or not Roger Federer is the best tennis player of all time. Had some good callers there and some good guests as well. Some nice and very interesting conversation having to do with that topic. So check it out. And remember that every Sunday evening at 9 p.m., Eastern Standard Time, we have a new show, and you can listen to it live and also call in and participate at blogtalkradio.com/essentialtennis. You guys can find the link at essentialtennis.com/live. So that does it for this week. Take care, everybody, and good luck with your tennis.